work? Okay, cool.
Morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
There's an interesting expression that's used in 12-step recovery a lot of times. It says, bring the body and the mind will follow. But I stopped to think about that a little bit and say, well, who's bringing the body? When Ram Dass had one of his first psychedelic experiences, he found himself losing or letting go of all different kinds of aspects of himself, including his physical body. And it freaked him out for a moment until he said, well, wait a minute, who's minding the store? There's some part of me that's observing this whole process, you know, that's not being lost as far as that goes. And he said, it'll take me a few more lifetimes to process that particular awareness. But it's kind of interesting if you stop every once in a while and say, well, you know, all of this stuff that we get wrapped up in, you know, who is it that's getting all wrapped up in that? And of course, many times it's our limited consciousness that's getting wrapped up in it, but we're so wrapped up in our limited consciousness, we don't even realize that one. So yeah, bring the body and the mind will follow, but recognize that the soul is the one that's bringing the body in the first place. Oh. Yeah, Jamie.
You made me think of something.
Were any of you around years ago, many years ago, I think it was St. Joseph Hospital at Preston and Eastern Boulevard, and somebody came, probably because I was in here, Sarah and I were in here, and we heard that somebody was going to talk about LSD or something. Does anybody recall any of that? We went to it. You remember?
Yes.
Who was the speaker? Was it someone like Ram Dass or somebody else?
I think it was Ram Dass.
Or yeah. Patrick O'Leary? I can't remember. But I thought it was interesting at the time
that it was out in the open.
Yeah. Well, at the time, Timothy O'Leary and Ram Dass and other characters like that, LSD was not, at least in the beginning stages, was not illegal. Mm-hmm. Okay. In fact, it was discovered by a Swedish chemist as a something that was left over on a wheat rust, actually, a mold on wheat. And then it was being used by psychiatrists throughout, especially Western Europe, as a drug possibly, well, first of all, they weren't even using it in any therapeutic sense. I don't want to get too much off this subject, but what they were using it for was they discovered that this particular chemical can mimic psychosis for a short period of time. I mean, that was one of the things it could do. And so it was distributed to many, many psychiatrists, medical doctors, at that particular time. This was in kind of in the mid and late 50s. And then it was discovered that, especially by some people who were kind of getting on some sort of spiritual path, okay, that it could do much more than that. In fact, one of the original researchers is a teacher and friend of ours by the name of Dr. Stan Grof, who was from Czechoslovakia, psychiatrist from Czechoslovakia, who was one of the first LSD researchers. But one of the things he discovered was that this can actually create very helpful, at least for some people, altered states of consciousness. You know, it wasn't just, I want to get high. This was something very, very different from that. And most of the earlier experimenters in that process, for them, it wasn't necessarily just about getting high. It was about learning something more deeply about themselves that they necessarily couldn't reach. Of course, what Ram Dass found out was a little bit later on was that this was obviously one very incomplete way of discovering the truth about yourself. Because what he did was, when he first was over in India, he gave his guru a huge dose of LSD. And he kept sitting there waiting for it to take effect. And nothing happened. And his guru, Neem Karoli Baba, turned to him and said, "That's interesting medicine that you gave me, okay? But we can get there much easier and much better in different ways." And he went, "Oh." Oh. And in a way, that's what we're doing. Because if you haven't recognized it yet, when you walk in here every Sunday morning, you almost automatically put yourself in an altered state of consciousness. There are things that you leave at the door out there, maybe not even thinking about. And when you come in here and your mind wanders off someplace where it's bound to do, right, you just sort of gently, like in meditation, you just sort of gently bring it back again. There's no judgment, there's no shame, there's no guilt, there's what did I miss? You know, it's like, I'm going to absorb whatever it is I need to absorb. So let me just come back here to my focus, to my concentration again. So again, we're kind of learning how to do that more and more naturally, because that's part of the process. It's not about denying anything. It's not about throwing anything away. It's about coming back to that state of awareness, non-judgmental awareness. We kind of ended last week on this idea of duality and non-duality. And what I didn't get a chance to mention, which I will, is that I won't say the goal, because as soon as you create a goal, you create another duality, right? You create a goal and I'm not there yet, right? Can you get a sense of that? Right? Something that I don't have, right? But really what I think what spiritual awareness is all about is being able to live in non-duality. That's a place, and in simple terms, it's a place of non-judgment. Judgment, by its very nature, creates duality, right? Non-duality, in a sense, is created by non-judgment. You know, we could say that Ho'oponopono practice of, you know, "I love you, I'm so sorry, please forgive me, thank you," is another way of releasing judgment and, in a very real sense, creating non-duality or getting in touch with non-duality. And by the way, if you haven't noticed yet, we have great opportunities for that in this world that we live in. You don't have to go very far to recognize I'm either in judgment or I'm releasing. Great lessons to be learned. Somebody had a hand up a moment ago.
I was just going to share that I was in some research with LSD here in Louisville. And we attempted to use it as a treatment modality. Mm-hmm. And it was quite interesting. But then they quit using it after a couple of years.
People really didn't know what they were doing most of the time, okay? Something that's quite not terribly known too much, but Bill Wilson took LSD after he got sober. He had heard about Aldous Huxley in England working with LSD, and as he read some descriptions of many people's experience, it sounded to him and felt to him very, very similar to his spiritual awakening. If you read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a whole section on Bill Wilson's spiritual awakening where he said, if there is a God, let him show himself. And he did, okay? You know, the room lit up, and he lit up, and all sorts of other kind of things happened. And he was convinced at that particular time that there was more than just what his thought process might be able to produce. But he thought that this might be something that would be very, very, that would be very effective for recovering alcoholics. He tried it, discovered that it was very similar to his own spiritual awakening, but it wasn't something he thought that would really be helpful to other people. However, what I mentioned before, Stan Grof, he did work with recovering people, and sometimes they were able to have a spiritual kind of experience, a spiritual kind of awakening, which turned them around from their addictive nature. So it did certainly have some effects of that, but that's kind of a little bit of a side that I don't want to get too much into right now. Okay. The body. I have a body, you have a body, but it's not who you are. And how often we forget. Not deliberately forget, but how often we get lost in that. Especially when we think there's something wrong with the body. And then we immediately get into fear and we get into judgment. What's important to recognize is that the more I become attached to something, the more fear I create around it. So the more I become it's not just becoming attached to my body, it's becoming attached to my body as being my identity. This is who I am. And the more I become attached to that, the more fear I create around it. And the more clinging I become. And of course we run into the same thing we did with any other kind of attachment, is the body that I'm clinging to is not the one that I have now, but it's the one I think I should have now. Anybody recognize that one? I mean, this is not the one I should have, okay, so I'm not attached to this one. I'm attached to the one I think I should have. Which is even more of an illusion than the other one, if I stop and think about it. What am I attached to? I'm attached to something I think I should have. Well, who tells me, who's telling me I think I should have that?
Every magazine
I come across, every commercial on television, okay? As we said with the Porcelana commercial, you know, last week, okay? Some people call these age spots. I call them ugly, all right? So I'll get some Porcelana to put on them. And as Ram Dass said, you know, some people call these ugly. I call them age spots, right? I don't have to do anything with them. They just happen to be there. Now, where are we coming from? It's not denying the body, you know? If you want a cup of ice cream, go ahead and do that. Enjoy it. If you want to, you know, turn over and get another half hour of sleep, go ahead. If you're reading a book in the middle of the afternoon, which seems to happen to many of us when we get a little bit older, and you kind of get a little doze off. So nobody's watching. And even if they are, the hell with them. So it's not about denying that, but it's about recognizing that this body that we've created, this body that we've brought into this incarnation with us, is in many ways a teacher. Just like the life events that we might create for ourselves, so our body is also a teacher, something that we can learn something from, kind of many, many different lessons. One of the lessons we learn is that this is not who I am, which sounds rather contradictory, but is also true. So maybe we can begin with that affirmation that we actually ended with last week, that I encouraged us to read over again if you got the opportunity, on page 329. And if you don't have a book, you can just let this sink in. I am now choosing to bring my physical body to the next level of its incarnation and become aware of all ways in which I still hold the physical body, physical form, in abeyance of the higher frequency. I am now realigning my knowing to become newly aware of my responsibility to heal my body as is required by my choices to feed myself, care for myself, and inhabit my surroundings in wellness. I am now coming to know that my body is a joyful vehicle, and I am celebrating it in divine love and thanking it for being with me on this remarkable journey in consciousness. I am now choosing to accept the awareness and the actions that are required to support me in realigning my form to hold and vibrate at this new frequency, I am Word. And you know how you do that the best and the most? You love your body where it is. And you recognize that even that is just simply my perception. Because what we awaken to sometimes is even when we are ill, even when there is something not working correctly in our body, or correctly the way we think it should, right? That there's still 99% of my body that's working perfectly. Or I wouldn't be standing here, neither you wouldn't be sitting there, okay? And so here I am focusing on this 1% that's not working correctly or working in a way I don't want it to, right? And ignoring the other 99%. What really brings me health and healing is raising the vibration of my body. Now, it doesn't mean neglecting what we need to pay attention to, but by raising the vibration, by loving it, by loving this body, by loving this vehicle, I literally raise the vibration within it and around it, and I give it room to heal. If I hate it, if I can't stand it, if I'm angry at it, if I'm sick to my stomach about it, if I'm whipping it and saying you should be some way else, I am actually blocking the healing that is available to me. Now, here, one of the catch here is, or at least one of them is I don't know what that healing is going to look like. You know, maybe a doctor is going to need to operate on me. Maybe that's the vibration of healing. That I don't know that. I don't know what the healing is going to look like. Or maybe it's, you know, the symptom or whatever it is that I happen to be attached to is going to go away. I don't know. And so here's another really big challenge on the physical level of our being, of letting go of the form that I think the healing is supposed to take. And I know I've mentioned this many times before, but I go back to Ram Dass when he went to see John of God and came back home and still was paralyzed on one side of his body. And everything else was still the same as it was when he went there. And he said, no, he said, it's different. He said, I wasn't cured, but I was healed. My body still had all of the same symptoms it had when it had the stroke. But I was no longer attached to that as being bad or wrong. I was no longer attached to that as being at fault. I was perfectly fine with where I was at. Now that doesn't mean I'm just going to ignore that I'm going to ignore any kind of physical therapy that's being offered to me. I'm going to take advantage of all of that stuff. But again, I don't know what form that healing is going to take for me. I am perfectly okay with where I am right now. And being perfectly okay with where I am right now, I am healed, I am whole. I remember going to see him. He was here in town a number of years ago. It was after the stroke and he was up on stage in a wheelchair. And I was wondering what it was going to... Here was a man who was so eloquent in his words, and I was wondering what it was going to be like with, you know, these, what I would consider to be these long, uncomfortable silences where he was kind of hunting for the right word to say. And his aura was so powerful, his peaceful aura was so powerful that I felt none of that. Maybe some other people did, but it was like, oh, it's quiet right now. He's thinking about the answer. And it might have taken him a couple of minutes to kind of string a couple of words together to answer a particular question or to express a particular idea, and it was perfectly okay. This was not a crippled being in a wheelchair. That was the illusion. And that was fascinating because somehow or another he allowed other people to break through that illusion as well. What is it you are seeing? I'm not seeing a being in a broken body, okay? I'm seeing somebody express himself through ways and means that I didn't even think possible. I am word through my body requires the body to begin to realign itself into the frequency of the word, the creator, the creative energy of who you are. If you want to, that's how you can translate that. That's one way of translating that. And it is a big step because the body, up until now, has been expressed in consciousness without its own awareness of its divinity. Of its divinity. Oh. The mind is divine. The body is divine. The ego is divine. Oh, really? Wouldn't that be an interesting trip? But of course, as you are divine, the form that you stand in is divine as well. Oh, nobody told me that. Now, we would like to remember you to your own health and well-being. And to remember is to bring you forth in an awareness of your own divine perfection and Christ consciousness. I am now choosing to know myself in perfect health and perfect body. I am experiencing myself as who I am in truth, and I am realigning the cells of my body to vibrant well-being and to a knowledge of themselves as manifestation of the Christ consciousness. I am word through this intention, word I am word. I think I might have mentioned last week or the week before that as we started this whole episode on the physical body of what is called in the New Testament the Transfiguration, when Jesus took Peter, James, and John up onto the mountaintop, Mount Tabor, right? And essentially said, watch this. I'm going to show you what I know I am, but it's also a reflection of who you are. You just haven't gotten there yet. And his face shone like the sun, and his garments became white as snow. And at the same time, Moses and Elijah showed up, okay, and said, you know, we understand that because we've done that too. We know that. We know that too. And of course, the apostles, Peter, James, and John, fell on their face and freaked out, right? But Peter had the intuitive wisdom to say, Lord, it is good for us to be here. It's good for us to know this. It's good for us to be reminded of this. I'll probably forget as soon as I stub my toe when we're walking down the mountain, okay? But it's good for us to remember this one. Thank you. Greater things than this shall you do. So this body is not just poor brother ass that I'm dragging around, okay? That's giving me fits and starts as I get a little bit older every day, okay? It's not only just my teacher. It's an aspect, an expressive aspect of my divine self and yours as well. So I can cuss it out if I want to. I can cuss yours out if I want to. I can make judgments about yours if I want to. I can make judgments about mine if I want to. But all of that is, I will say it's meaningless illusion, but at the same time it also lowers the vibration of things. It'd be like if a child that we know and love in our lives hurts themselves and starts crying. You say, oh, come on, just get up. Wipe those tears away. Get up. Or do we say, come over here, let me give you a hug. Let me kiss it and make it better. Remember that one? Mm-hmm. And it was.
Yeah.
It was. How'd that happen? Because I'm sure, I don't realize it at the particular time, I'm sure my mother didn't realize it at the particular time, but I'm sharing with you my divine nature. I am telling you that you don't have to hold on to that hurt. Love can take the place of that hurt. Wow. See, we knew that already. Now, the next step is applying it to ourselves. Can I kiss it and make it better? Our choices with you are always to lead you forward. And if you can imagine, this is so beautiful, that our hands are taking yours to pull you forward, with your agreement, we will do so. All you gotta say is, it's okay with me. And of course my ego goes, where the hell are we going? I don't know about this. When you call this intention forth, the first thing you may become aware of is where you are not honoring the body. Where you are complaining about your back or your weight or a gesture that makes you uncomfortable or the pigment of your skin. You must understand right away that much of this is habituated behavior that can be transformed through the work that we have done so far. But as you realign to this understanding of your own perfection, the mirror that you stand before will be transformed. And not to make you resemble something you think you should be, but to show you the manifestation of who you are in truth. I wanted to share something with you. I came across this a number of years ago. It was a kind of a free-form poem written by Dori Previn. Some of you might remember a gentleman by the name of Andre Previn, a master musician. Dori Previn, his wife, was a poet. Beautiful, sensitive poet. This doesn't have a title, but I'll share it with you anyway. I think it fits. I no longer plead with heaven or go rummaging in books for answers to the questions life contains. Now I listen to this inner thing resounding in the pulsing and the pounding of my infant ancient veins. I no longer seek instruction from my father and my mother. I have mastered all their pleasures and their pain. Now I listen to this inner thing resounding in the pulsing and the pounding of my infant ancient veins. The feeling in my blood flow is a simple thing, you see. Everything and nothing in the parody is me. I'm the hero, I'm the villain, the beginning and the end. I'm creator, I'm destroyer, I'm the enemy, the friend. I'm an animal, a spirit, flying high and falling down. I am special, I'm important, I am sacred, I'm a clown. So I stumble through the chaos, dragging clumsily behind me all the eggshells and the fish scales and the fur pelts of my past, while this thing goes on inside me, at one with all the vastness, the fantasies and fictions, and when all the contradictions come together, they will fit. The feeling in my blood flow is a simple thing, you see. I am it. We are everything and nothing, but that's how to play the game. In these weather-beaten bodies with these God-forsaken brains, we can listen to the universe resounding in the pulsing and the pounding of our ancient veins. Listen, 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 and it all begins to fit. You are it. You are it. You are it. We would like to remind you that the energy that you are is of God, and what is outpictured in that mirror, finally, is the aspect of God that you are in form, having an experience here on this plane. Your justification for how you have treated yourself in the past is not a claim to the future behavior that you can incur through the choice to live in joy in the physical form that you stand in. In other words, you do not have to bring the past into the present. Remember that wonderful quote from Course in Miracles? When you bring the past into the present, you create a future just like your past. Okay. Don't have to do that. Now, our requirements for you in this chapter are about choice and form and understanding your lives as your responsibility. The work of this book has not been about healing as much as it has been about transformation of consciousness. I get that. Healing, again, for most of us is going to be a goal we want to create. I'm here, and healing is over there someplace. And I will guarantee you, once you heal something, you will find something else that needs to be healed. Again and again and again and again and again, okay? That's just the way the mind works, okay? And so essentially what this is saying is that one of our objects here is not to create another sense of duality. Because then all you'll be thinking about is what we might call what needs to be healed inside of me, instead of what is already whole. Where's the energy that already exists in wholeness for me? The work of this book has not been about healing as much as it has been about transformation of consciousness. Again, a real simple example of that, Myrtle Fillmore. I am a divine child of God. I do not inherit illness. Was she denying what was going on with her body? Not necessarily. Saying, here's my body that has an illness that the doctors are diagnosing as tuberculosis, and they give me 6 months or 2 years or something like that to live. Okay? That is not who I am. I am transforming my affirmation and the words that I continue to tell myself about who I am in truth. What will happen as a result of that affirmation, of repeating and aligning myself to that truth, I really don't know. I could get hit by a bus tomorrow. Okay? But in a sense, that's beside the point. What I am doing right now is I am refusing to create any more energy around a lower vibration of thought. And what I am doing now is I am choosing to create energy around a higher vibration of thought. That is my choice. What the result might look like on the material plane, I really do not know. And in fact, it is probably very wise of me to let go of that. And as we have explained to you, as your consciousness is transformed, the healing occurs as a default response to the new awareness that you have come to. This is what happens when you lay claim to your own divinity. When you lay claim to your own divinity, you cannot help but being divine. Who condemns you? No one, Lord. Now, romance. Let's talk about this for a moment. It's an ideal. And we want you to understand the benefit of it if you can understand that love as a frequency holds romance, but that romance itself is an idealization that is primarily based in desire and the ideal of longing. We are not bypassing true love as it has been expressed in the storybooks. We are simply reminding you that you detail things in accordance with prescribed patterns that may or may not serve you. So we would ask you each at this time to elevate your consciousness to a broad sense of true love, to incorporate all and everyone that you see before you. Again, I apologize for repeating myself, but I think it deserves repeating. I was reading The Course in Miracles years ago and came across the section on relationships. And part of that was called special relationships. And it started telling me that special relationships were an illusion and were a clinging to something that wasn't there. And I took offense with that because my relationship with Margot was special. I had just had the opportunity to hold my first granddaughter. We were walking along the cold streets of a Chicago winter, and I was holding her just kind of close to my chest. She had one of those sleeping bags, you know, the babies had, and I was just, and people wanted to know, do you want me to, I said, no, I'm fine. Because all that energy was just going right into my heart. And I said, well, that's a special relationship. And so I was arguing with my mind. I'm arguing with a book. Did you ever do that? Here I am arguing with a book. And then I said, well, wait a minute. Let me sit with this for a moment. And so I sat with it for a moment. I said, what's going on here? And my inner awareness said something to the effect of, well, remember how deeply you love Michaela, your first granddaughter. And I said, yeah. And they said, well, that's how you're supposed to love everybody. And I went, oh. In other words, okay, don't make that one special. Recognize the love, but don't deny it either. Recognize the heartfelt love and the unconditional love that comes from that particular consciousness, comes from that relationship, and realize that you need to apply that to everyone. Oh. That came home to me. All and everyone that you see before you. Again, that's why I find that Ho'oponopono so powerful. When I get into judgment, I love you, I'm so sorry, please forgive me, thank you. I had a lot of opportunities for saying that yesterday. There are such things, of course, as soulmates. And these are people that you have gone into agreement with to learn and to share from. But please understand, everyone, that your dictate that something should last forever is primarily a construct born out of the fear of losing something. What is true in love is everlasting, and that will always be the case. You all have choices. You all have responsibilities and requirements of this time. Very, very simply, are that you become conscious of them. Respond now to this next section tomorrow. We are going to finish this today with a new ideal. I am now choosing to realign my physical body and my experience of myself on this plane of existence to encompass the higher frequency so that I may know myself in form as an aspect of the Creator. I am Word through this intention. Word, I am Word. And you can close your books for a moment. We're going to take a little bit of time to do a meditation. Just close your eyes, take a couple of breaths. And just listen to the sounds that are going on around you, even the sounds that are going on outside the door. You can imagine you're kind of like a little space satellite with these antennas sticking out, picking up all of this information. Sounds, smells, touch, light. And then what you do is you sort of draw those antennas inward so that all of those sensations begin to become dampened a little bit. You pull them inward toward your spiritual heart. And you breathe into that space. And the book has used these words quite often, especially in this section, about being in alignment with. And so let us take a moment to understand that internally. I'd like you to think of someone in your life or a particular incident or circumstance in your life that you dearly love. Whenever you think about this or feel it or sense it or bring it to mind, love is one of the energies that you are aware of. You might even be able to experience your heart opening a bit. Notice what it would be like to bring all of your conscious awareness of your body, your awareness of your mind, your awareness of your other feelings and emotions. What it would be like to bring all of that consciousness into alignment with the love you are experiencing. You don't have to think about that. You don't have to decide what you have to do to let that happen. Just being aware that it can happen, that it will happen, that it is happening, allows that to become your truth. You can breathe into that. We'll do one other one like that. Imagine someone or something in your life that brings you joy. Kind of tune into that. And imagine again what it would be like to align all of your consciousness to align your physical being, your mind, and your emotions to that joy. And you can breathe into that for a moment. And then lastly, imagine what it would be like to become aware that you are in alignment with all of the beings in this room. All of those that have bodies and all of those who don't. And then to take that one in. And then breathe, stretch a bit. You can open your eyes when you're ready.